Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Each week, we tackle a different issue that's uniquely Portland. So tune in every Saturday to hear a new episode complete with interviews and editorial that helps explain our city. From Portland's leading paper comes a brand new way to engage with the news, sports, arts, and culture. Stick around. Welcome to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Today is July 3rd, one day out from the best day of the year. I'm a big fireworks and cake guy myself, and we had it stolen from us last year, so going extra big this year. Obviously, staying safe. You know the drill. Keep your hands away from fireworks. You know, do what you got to do. But let's have some fun as well, yeah? For episode 27 of the Dive Podcast, we continue our 10-part series where we interview movers and shakers in our community, in Portland, and our state. In the first episode of the installment, we interviewed Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler, and then we interviewed City Commissioner Mingus Mapps, and then Multnomah County Health Officer Dr. Jennifer Vines. This week, we are joined by U.S. Senator Ron Wyden. Portland and the Pacific Northwest is in the middle of an unprecedented heat wave. We had that last weekend, but it continues on. And so I wanted to get our U.S. Senator's thoughts on wildfires, climate change, and what he's doing to help our city, state, and country on that issue. So here is that interview. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so the Pacific Northwest is in really unprecedented times. I mean, Portland has faced the hottest temperatures on record like three times. We've broken the record like three times this weekend. I know Seattle, I read, has had temperatures over 100 like three times in recorded history. And then they had it three times again this weekend or something like that. What's going on? What are we seeing here?
Well, first of all, it seems like kind of bizarro world. You remember those old Seinfeld things. I was talking to some friends in Dallas. Apparently, it has been raining like crazy there. It's been bone dry here. So north is south. I mean, go figure. You know, the fact is, though, that this drought is unprecedented. You know, we're looking at it getting worse every single week. Senator Merkley and I been getting briefings. I've been moving around the state. And here's something that's kind of current. For weeks now, I've been working closely with the White House and the Forest Service to make sure that they are dealing with what I consider to be an unprecedented situation in the woods. Historically, the situation has been Oregon would have a fire, and California and Idaho and Nevada, our neighbors, would rush to help us, and vice versa. This year, and I've been talking to the White House about this for weeks, we are looking at the prospect of multiple big fires in the West, infernos in the West, taking place simultaneously. So a few weeks ago, I made the case to the Forest Service and the White House that we've got to be mobilized, and I expect in another two or three days, the Biden administration, the president himself, will be announcing the steps that they are taking, because certainly if we are looking at multiple big fires west-wide, this is going to push our system. In fact, Vicki Christensen, the Forest Service chief, in response to my questions, said that the system has been at its breaking point under the current set of threats. She was talking before the situation we're dealing with now. So I'm very hopeful that we'll hear, and I have every reason to expect we'll hear, that the Biden administration is going to stake out some strong ground to deal with this.
Okay, yeah, we'll be looking for that. You know, there's two topics, right? Because there's the climate change and global warming that's happening, and scientists are expecting it to get even worse. All the numbers indicate it's going to get even worse. And then obviously, as a representative, you also have to be focused on American lives that are impacted by wildfires. So it's kind of like the present situation that like is today, tomorrow, and the day after. And then there's also the situation that's going on in 5 years and 10 years. So how do you think about, you know, how do you spend your time? How much of your time right now is being spent on, hey, we need to focus on the fire situation right this second, versus we need to put in legislation that'll make it so our grandkids can be safer?
Hank, it's striking, because I've always felt that the challenge was to put your foot in both camps. In other words, what I just explained to you that I've been working with the Biden administration on is a current an unprecedented threat we've got to deal with right now. Something that's going to take more time. I think we've sent you some information on it. I got legislation through the Senate Finance Committee. It passed the Senate Finance Committee, where I'm chairman, which is the most transformative in over 100 years with respect to the environment and certainly climate. The tax code has 44 separate breaks for energy, and most of them are relics to yesteryear, tilted toward fossil fuels. We essentially threw those 44 breaks into the dustbin of history. And we said we will substitute going forward three, one for clean energy, one for clean transportation fuel, and one for energy efficiency. And then in effect, we create this new lodestar, which is anybody who can reduce carbon emissions is eligible for the credits. So we put together a strong coalition of environmental groups. Essentially all the major Oregon environmental groups have supported, but also the labor unions and the Edison Electric Institute, because they understand that this is the future. And it passed the Finance Committee, and I'm going to make sure it's in one of these major upcoming bills that's being discussed going forward.
You know, it would be so easy if we could just have you come on and, you know, blame Trump, blame Biden, blame colleagues, blame you, and just say, hey, it's just been inaction for a long time. But my fear is that you can pass as many Green New Deals or as many deals or bills that you're talking about. But as long as I still want my packages to me in 12 hours and I still want to eat meat, processed meat and drive my Jeep Wrangler, there's no way to fix this. Am I right? Is this really going to take something more than any bill that can be done? And do we have to change the way that we live?
There is no question that no one piece of legislation is going to be a panacea. But I do think that if you're talking about changing behavior, which is what you're touching on, which is what legislators have the chance to affect, taxes affects people's behavior. Carbon pricing, which I have long been ready to go, affects behavior. A clean energy standard affects behavior. So nobody is saying, oh, well, let's go pass a bill and then we'll all go to a ceremony and we'll have dark suits on and we'll all congratulate each other and then climate change is gone. But I'm for one who believes that you can sure make a major difference. And apropos of blaming everybody, I mentioned, Hank, that the legislation I passed is more significant than anything the Finance Committee has done, controlled by both Democrats and Republicans over the last 100 years. Basically, everybody bought into this notion, well, let's just pass one of these things for a couple of years and a bunch of lobbies would line up and, you know, they would get their cut and we would just go about our business. I'm saying, wait a minute, it's time for a big departure. No more lurching from one thing for an 18-month or two-year period. Some of these bills that we've had in the past, Hank, have had a short shelf life shorter than a carton of eggs. And so there was no predictability, there was no certainty, and there sure as hell was no kind of direction the way what we've done. We've said, hey, look, if you're somebody who can reduce carbon emissions, this bill's for you.
Tell us more about this bill. Let's talk about it. Break it down for us.
Well, as I say, on the books, developed over years and years, some lobbyist would come in and say, I've got some people at home, and gosh, they need a tax break for this, that, something else. And the Senate, normally being the way the Senate is, everybody would say, sure, Bob, sure, Sally, whatever you guys want, we'll dump it in. And so we came up with this kind of crazy quilt of tax legislation that would be subject to fiscal cliffs that would come in and out. And we're all tilted towards who had the power, which were the fossil fuel interests. So people didn't think that the Finance Committee would ever do anything this significant. And right up until 2 days before we were getting ready to process the legislation, I had people in the Midwest, I'm convinced it was going to cause them problems, and people in Appalachia who thought it would cause them problems. And we just kept coming back to the proposition that what we're doing is not sustainable. And then when we got this coalition that's unprecedented from the Environmental Defense Fund and others to Edison Electric and the labor unions, people said, Ron's making a case. We've been doing this damn thing for year after year after year, just passing more stuff on and not really thinking through the ramifications for what it meant for the planet. And people were pretty surprised when the dust settled at the end of a long day and we got it passed.
Yeah. So on day one, you know, you talked about the electricity, you know, supporting electric innovation and supporting people who are cutting back on their own emissions. Are those the main things that come with this bill?
Electricity is right at the center, but of course they are key to all the things we want to do with respect to renewables. And, you know, part of the case that we were making to Edison Electric Institute is, you tell us, are people in the power sector still arguing that it makes sense in the private economy to make all these investments in fossils and in coal and like even in West Virginia, NPR's running a story that one of their museums is like, you know, heated with solar power. So we've not seen a coalition like this before. And I think they're all recognizing that now we've got an opportunity with an administration that's supportive of renewable energy. My package really in the renewable space fleshes out what the president was interested in. It puts down on paper for the first time that we would actually have a fundamental direction to help change behavior. In other words, the Biden package expands renewable energy, but it just kind of adds it on to this set of 40 breaks that we've gotten. In fact, some of the people that I like and have supported, they said, well, let's just add them on. I said, no, folks, the goal is to basically set this stuff that hasn't come close to connecting with the 21st century need in the dustbin of history and make a plan for the future and make sure everybody understands that if you're out there reducing carbon, that you have a chance to participate. And, you know, not only, you know, green energy benefits from this, but it directly relates to everything that we're seeing right now, a blistering hot summer, because what we've done, in addition to the new tax credits, I've got a 21st century civilian conservation corps where we could put thousands of young people to work. If we had that today, for example, we could have young people out there helping homeowners and businesses reduce fire risk. And then we built an environment and industry coalition for prescribed burns, which is in the cold weather months when you don't have the fire risk, you go in there and reduce the hazardous material to take some of the pressure off what we're seeing right now. So it's a big package, the tax incentives, the 21st century civilian conservation corps, and the prescribed burns. And all of them, Hank, go to your question, because you said, well, don't we have to do something bigger and the like? The answer, absolutely. But each of those three things that I mentioned goes to this question of altering behavior. My wife and I are older parents, both of us. We've got twins that are 13, a little one who's 8, bright red hair. When I was thinking about doing this bill, I said, this is for our twins and the 8-year-old and all the other kids who make up the future.
So you think there's hope? You're not punching your ticket to Mars quite yet.
Absolutely, there's hope, because, you know, we do a lot of things well in this country, but when we decide to make a fundamental change in direction, which is what I'm talking about, as I say, the Senate Finance Committee is the premier economics committee in the United States Senate. Everybody wants to get on it. Nobody thought we had a shot at doing this. And when we started building this coalition, I wasn't sure we could pull it off. When this country decides to make a fundamental change in direction, we do a pretty damn good job of playing catch-up ball.
Yeah. So, you know, people joke about Congress and they talk about the gridlock, and it's kind of known for it's kind of the butt of the joke, for being part of gridlock, and things move slowly. And it makes sense because you're representing all Americans, 300 million plus, and all the different interests. But you know, climate change is something that people have been talking about and predicting. Almost every scientist has been unanimous on how it's going to affect us. And so with that in mind, why do you think it's taken a long time to get some real change on this topic?
Well, I mean, I'm going to make 2 points. First, with respect to this idea, and I know that is people say, well, the United States Congress can't organize a two-car parade. You know, how in the world are they going to be able to deal with climate? Well, right now in our community, we're working through an idea that I got $1 billion for. It's called the CAHOOTS bill, where we got the police and the mental health people to work together on dealing with the challenges on the streets. And with the mental health needs exploding, this is the kind of thing that I believe you can convince senators of both political parties to focus on. I've been talking to Cory Booker. He's a Democrat. I've been talking to Senator Tim Scott, who's a Republican. We're going to keep building on it. And it really has its roots in Oregon. So that's number one. But I think number two, I think you were really asking about changing behavior, right? Isn't that going back to your question of changing behavior? I think this sets out a dramatically different way of doing business. And one of the reasons I'm encouraged is we're beating the lobbyists here. You said, why did it take so long? My God, I mean, the number of lobbyists in the space is staggering. And so when I was asking my colleagues on the finance committee, which, as I say, is the most in-demand committee in the United States Senate, do was pretty strong tea for the United States Senate. And the senators said, hey, look, we know the lobbyists are out there, but when you're talking about young Americans, for example, they are demanding a response to a climate emergency, and their voices are paying off now in every nook and cranny of the country.
Last question here. You've been in this role for a long time, and obviously, you know, we've seen the public kind of come around on the issue of climate change compared to, you know, 15 years ago, obviously, with people like Greta and all these young people coming out and striking for climate change and the likes of it. But have you seen in your work, have you seen your colleagues or people on the other side of the aisle come around to this topic? Are they different than they were 15 years ago? Or are you just like, okay, now we have the presidency and the numbers in Congress to get things passed. We're just going to get it passed. Or is there a change?
Hank, they're getting there. I'm not going to tell people who are paying attention to Willamette Week that we've got everybody there and it's a kumbaya moment. But when it's 109 degrees, for example, and I'm getting calls from friends, in various parts of the country, they're saying, you bet it's getting senators' attention. I mean, literally in Dallas, it's pouring rain. In Oregon, it's bone dry. And that's not the way it works in July. So I think that while we got a long way to go, we mobilized the votes to get it out of the Senate Finance Committee for a dramatic change in tax policy, which moves behavior. And yes, this is June. I think I said July, but it's still the beginning of the summer and people are paying attention. It's this hot.
Yeah. And then just following up on that, when you've talked a lot about, we've talked about this topic last time we chatted about how you like publicize bills, the way that you use words to describe bills, whether it's the Green New Deal or other things you're working on. Are you worried at all about the phrase global warming? Because then we get, eight inches of snow in Portland in winter and everyone's like, oh, I guess global warming isn't really a thing. And obviously, Dallas is like, hey, where's global warming now? Are you worried about that phrase as it attracts the idea of climate change in American eyes?
Well, let me give you an example from when I was chairman of the Energy Committee, Hank, because it's a really good question. When I was chairman of the Energy Committee a few years back, I would walk in, I talked to some of my colleagues, conservatives from the West, and talk about climate change. And, everybody kind of rolled their eyes a little bit. And then I said to him, would you have me talk about reducing carbon emissions instead? And they all said, that's something that we can score on when we're talking to Republicans. I mean, I had some very conservative Westerners, for example, without mentioning names, said, Ron, if you talk about reducing carbon emissions, I can stand up and make the case for geothermal power, which is one of the things that's very big with a number of conservatives. So you bet, Hank, that's a perfect one to close on. Language in politics really counts. For example, when I was talking about the CAHOOTS bill and organizing the mental health people and the law enforcement people, I said, folks, this is something both sides are for. They're both sides are committed to reimagining what the space is all about. And when I walked up to the Republicans and they were all kind of reluctant to say, oh, we agree with Ron about what NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Group, is doing. They didn't want to necessarily go that. When I said, how about we just reduce carbon emissions? They said, we're in. So language, apropos of the good work you guys are doing at Willamette Week on your podcast, really matters.
Thanks so much for your time.
Let's do it again, man.
Thanks. Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for listening to episode 27 of the Dive Podcast. Join us for episode 28. Same place, same time. We'll have another top secret special guest you're going to want to hear from. Let's just put it that way. Till then, stay safe, eat some red, white, and blue foods, keep those hands away from fireworks, and have some fun, you know? We're allowed to have fun now, so that's awesome. Also, remember to read our cover stories. We spend a lot of time on our cover stories. We're very proud of our cover stories, so if you haven't already, give that one a look. It's going to be awesome. So, really excited. Thank you so much for listening. Again, for Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders, and see you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganibon, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.